This is an iHeart podcast.
Identity politics. Why is there so much of it out there? The answer may disappoint you. We have Emma Jo Morris. We have the feminists still angry at me. We have a great I'm Right coming up now. Welcome to I'm Right. It's time for This Week in Wokeism. Identity politics. Do you like it? Now, hold on. Before you answer that question, I want you to make sure you're being honest with yourself. You don't have to be honest with me, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife. Be honest with yourself. Do you like identity politics? And hear me out here. I'm talking about identity politics as it pertains to you. Do you like it? Because I will tell you, because I'm a cold-hearted jerk, I don't really have feelings per se. I despise it everywhere I see it. The left, of course, lives on it, and we'll discuss why here in a moment. The right thinks they're gonna get in on the action, so that's why you see so much of that. As a woman, as a veteran, as a black guy, as an Asian, as a gay, that's why you see so much of it on the right as the right tries it too. But let's acknowledge something before we go into why the communists do it. Let's acknowledge they do it because it is effective on people. There is an old saying. I don't know if it's actually an old saying. I just made that up. I may have come up with this myself, but there's no ability like relatability. And that is the truth. We as human beings, I would consider this a flaw, but maybe it's just part of who we are. We as human beings, we want to be led by, hang out with, watch on TV people who identify with us in some way. Somebody we can relate to. He or she talks like me, looks like me, acts like me, dresses like me, drinks the same beer I do, eats Red Lobster like me. I think we human beings have a flaw in that. Now, let's go to how the communists use it, because this is actually the most important thing. And this is why, when you understand what they're doing, this is why we have to reject all identity politics all the time on the right. We can never, ever, ever fall into this trap of trying to use it. Because the communists use identity politics for different reasons. I've used this example before, but this is why they do what they do. Because everyone knows the different communist groups in America. If you don't, maybe you're a new viewer. There's only communism. Right here in America, American communism, cultural Marxism. Yes, it's here. Yes, that's what it is. That's why practically all of them call themselves that now. But people think they get under the mistaken impression there are different parts of it. No, there's the BLM part, and then Antifa is separate, and then the LGBTQ insanity, that's different, and the feminine, no. They're all the same. That's why they all work together all the time. They all have the same goal, the destruction of the United States of America, frankly, the destruction of everything, but that's their goal. But that doesn't make sense, does it? Why, you see, we have these child drag shows now, these despicable child drag shows, and something you may have noticed recently is they get armed security now for these, only the armed security, it's not a security guard, it's Antifa. Antifa guys with guns show up. Now, why would the anti-fascists show up and guard a child drag show? Even if they're not enemies, they're not connected. Well, here's why. Remember, communism itself, it's never been about the workers, the working class. It's never been about taking the bourgeois down a notch. Those were always lies from the very, very beginning. Communism is not complicated. Any society, doesn't matter, large, small, the best, the worst, any society will have inevitably malcontents. People who feel, rightly or wrongly, that they have been wronged by that society and they're bitter about it. You know, everyone gets wronged at some point in time, but what you want, if you're a communist, you have to find the malcontents because those are the bitter ones. So if you're an American communist, here's what you're doing at all times, and I want you to understand this because the right misses this, and this is what they do when they try to play this game. If you're an American communist, what you're after is more recruits. You always need more recruits. They need more people in the tent. We need more people for the cause, more people to protest here, more people to run for office here, more people to knock on doors here. Constantly recruiting, constantly building your numbers. But how do you do that? Well, here's how you do that. I want you to picture an auditorium, 1,000 people seated in the auditorium. All right, there's 1,000 people in there. And I, Communist Jesse, I stand up in front of this auditorium. And it's my job as Communist Jesse to recruit as many people out of that audience to my cause as humanly possible, because I hate America and I want to burn it down. So I need to find me the malcontents in the audience. So I will stand up in front of that audience and I'll say, hey, who thinks America's racist? This country's been racist against black people. And if you think that's true, join me and we'll fight back. Well, out of 1,000 people, how many am I going to get with that message? 5? 10? I mean, even if it's 20 or 30, that's something. I have new recruits, but it's not enough. It's not near enough. So I need more malcontents. That's not enough. So I'll gather my 20, 30. Nice work, guys. Yeah, we'll get America. Hang on a second. I got to go back and get us some reinforcements. I'll stand up on stage and I'll say, who are the bitter, short-haired feminists in here? I saw a bunch of Subarus in the parking lot. Who are you? I know America's been mean to women. It's always been a country that's mean to women. Join me and we'll fight back. And then they set their cats down and they stand up in their flats and they say, yeah, Jesse, America's evil. We're joining. And so I gather them in, another 20, 30, 40 feminists. Hey, feminists, nice, welcome in. Hey, sit over here with the angry black guys and we'll burn down America in a minute. But this still isn't enough. And then I go do the same with the, who thinks America's warming the climate? Who thinks America is anti-gay? You know what I mean? It's just a big recruiting pitch to bring more people into the tent. And of course, this is where the right normally does this, that the right loves to do this. The right will step in and they'll say things like, well, I don't know why they fall for this. Joe Biden's the real racist. He called someone boy.
And you got a hell of a new governor in Wes Moore, I tell you. He's the real deal, and the boy looked like he can still play. He got some guns on him.
So does that make Joe Biden a racist? Is that what we should go with today? Or all the history of the vaguely or sometimes extremely racist things Joe Biden has said?
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
And let's lay one thing to rest. I may be a practicing Catholic. I used to go to 7:30 Mass every morning in high school and then in college before I went to the black church. Not a joke. Andy knows this.
There's a place where I was the only white guy that worked as a lifeguard down in that area, the east side. And you know you can always tell where the best basketball in the state is and the best basketball in the city is. It's where everybody shows up.
The three congressmen you have here, two of them look like they really could and did play ball, and the other one looks like he could bomb you.
Okay, so here's what the right does. The right loves to do this. They'll pull those old videos of Joe Biden and they'll say, see, Democrats are the real racist guys. Totally missing what's going on. Is Joe Biden racist? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe he's got one of those older guys with the racist views. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But you're totally missing the point if that's what you did there. It's not that they are or aren't racist. It's that they use identity politics as a recruitment arm to bring more malcontents into the fold. And this is why any attempt by the right to try to play that game will inevitably fail. Why? Because if you start playing that game, you're trying to appeal to the same malcontents the communists are appealing to, and you will always lose to them in the end. This is why I roll my eyes the second I hear anyone on the right say, as a woman, as a veteran, as a black guy, as a this, as a that, your little qualifiers mean you've already lost. The second you start dividing people up like that, you're officially playing the communist game on the communist field with the communist referees enforcing the communist rules, and I'm sorry, you're not going to win. That's the communist game. And remember this, remember, it is just a game to them. Joe Biden doesn't believe in any of that, doesn't care. None of them do. You see this Georgia State Senator calling Clarence Thomas an Uncle Tom?
Place a statue of Clarence Thomas on this grounds, we cannot avoid that conversation, so I'm not going to avoid it either. In the black community, we have an expression, we have a term in the black community. That term that we use is called Uncle Tom.
So today, you'll see everybody on the right saying, look at this, Democrats are the real racists. Look at, they're the real racists. Oh, stop. That's basement level thinking. Think beyond. That's not that they're the real racists. That guy doesn't care actually that much about race one way or the other. It's not that they're the real racists. It's that they're the real communists. And Clarence Thomas, his real mortal sin for that guy? What got him called an Uncle Tom by that guy? Clarence Thomas didn't step up for the malcontent meeting and step into the communist recruiting tent. He chose to go another way. In the end, they're not feminists. They're not civil rights guys. They're not LGBTQ activists. They're not BLM. They're not Antifa. They're not climate change activists. In the end, they're all just communists. And that's why we can't play the game. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an incredible show for you tonight with some eye-popping information. Did you know Iran is operating in South America? That doesn't sound good. We'll talk about that. Before we talk about that, let's talk about this. Let's talk about forgetting. I do this. This is what I mean by forgetting. We have people in our society we honor. And like our veterans. Our veterans served and we honor them and we respect them, right? We do. Hey, man, you went over there, you put in the time, you made the sacrifice, the blood, sweat, and tears, and I respect you. We say that. And I know we mean that. I'm not dismissing that. But when it comes to actually helping them, we fall short a lot. We do. Look, we're busy. I'm not judging you. I'm not actually not even judging myself, but we do. We fall short. They come back. Mentally, they're just, they've been through a lot, more than a human being should. And they can't get right. And so many of them are taking their own lives. It is just really sad. I talked to you about Boulder Crest because they're helping in tangible ways. They're bringing these veterans in, and instead of chucking a bottle of pills at them, they're getting them back on their feet and back in the world. And there's nothing more blessed than that. If you want to help them, go to bouldercrest.org and help them do that. bouldercrest.org. Help them help the vets, all right? We'll be back.
One of the things Republicans say is a priority for them is investigating your family, your son Hunter, your brother Jim. They talk about access that they say others have gotten because of you, because of your political success. How do you plan to deal with that?
The public's not going to pay attention to that. They want these guys to do something. If the only thing they can do is make up things about my family, it's not going to go very far.
I love how she asked the question. You know what? We're going to ask Emma Jo about this. Joining me now, Emma Jo Morris, Breitbart News political editor and the one who broke the Hunter Biden laptop story. Emma Jo, this kills me the way the reporters asked the question. So dismissive of it already, just gearing up to fight for them. These Republicans and their icky questions about that. Obviously, fake laptop.
Yeah, very, very gently, too. Very gently for their king of the establishment, Joe Biden. Yeah, no, it's. I mean, the press has really disgraced themselves. I think that they are probably, like, maybe more than the Bidens, the biggest casualty of this whole saga is how they've really just been exposed as actual political operatives. Like, it's not even partisan press. Like, that's too light. And you know, the way that he says the alleged or whatever, you know, like he dismisses it and she's just like, yes, that's right. It's all lies. That's right. I mean, we have it in writing. So this is just like another straw on that camel's back of the media just looking like absolute fools. They look like fools. And, you know, this is kind of all, like, Joe Biden hasn't received the most updated memo, which James Clapper transmitted the other day, right? When he says to his now colleague at CNN, Natasha Bertrand, he kind of blasted her for, if you recall, that letter published, I think, on October 17th, just a few days after we published the laptop from hell at the Post, right, where they were like, this is Russian disinformation. 51 former intelligence officials say so. And that was used to buttress the narrative by the media and by social media about why we weren't allowed to read this or talk about it or something, that the laptop from hell is Russian disinformation. And then Joe Biden used that on the debate stage as well. And Clapper now has come out and said, oh, Natasha Bertrand lied about what I said. I didn't say that. I said that I didn't know, even though he was on CNN saying that he did know, and that is what he was saying. But anyway, there's some people who are now trying to reorient the narrative around this, that no, it wasn't Russian disinformation, actually. And you know, it's real, but it's just not that bad, or doesn't prove anything. But they're really like, they're scrambling now, because as obviously we know, the Congress is investigating this, and they're giving the Biden family a rectal exam, and the FBI for that matter. And as it turns out, it wasn't Russian disinformation at all. And not only was it not true, but it is what it looks like, obviously.
I'm glad you brought that up about the media, because this is one thing that drives me insane about the right. The right is so fond of saying things like, oh, they're so biased, or imagine if a Republican did this. They're not biased. They're not left. They're not liberal. They're actively hostile against you, and they hate everything you care about. I don't know why we have such a hard time acknowledging this.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And you know, they not only do they not care, or not only do they hate you, but they... You are an other. You're an other. You're a rube. You're an idiot. And maybe that information is true, but Joe Biden needs to be president because we say so. And with that mentality comes, you know, justifying that behavior, which is lying, obfuscating, curating, and running interference for political candidates and people in power who they favor. It's not bias. That's silly. It's like, you know, bias, like that's just like an opinion that you hold that maybe colors like your view of the world or whatever. This is not that at all. They are operating on behalf of a security state. This is an operation that they're a part of and that they're active in.
You are a journalist. I am not. I am one of those idiots. I'm not a journalist. You are. And so I'm trying to figure out how I would take it if I put in the time, I broke a story like this, which this is honestly, if we had a media that wasn't hostile to us, this is one of the big stories, not just of the year, of the decade. The president's son, hostile foreign ties, it looked really bad, and yet was squashed so hard by all the powers that be. What was that like as a journalist? You break the something that in a normal world would win you a Pulitzer and instead dismissed. Was that wild, hurtful, angering? What was it?
It was definitely, okay, so this is how I think about it. It was totally mind-blowing, of course, and infuriating in certain ways, of course, you know, because I wrote a story that I knew was newsworthy and was important. I mean, I actually wasn't a reporter, I was an editor, you know, so I'm looking at it as an editor and I'm like, this is the story of the election. People called it an October surprise. Like, it happened to have come out in October, but I published as soon as I could when I was able to verify and go with, like, to print with what I had. It wasn't like I timed this in any sort of political way. And then that being said, it's like, so I was infuriated with it. I was disgusted with it, obviously, as somebody who believes in like a free press and who was working at the time for a paper founded by Alexander Hamilton. You know, it's like, think about that. But, you know, yes, all of that for sure. But at the same time, it's like, I am not how I describe the rest of the media. I'm not a political operative. You know, so this story happened to have worked in Trump's favor. But first of all, I would have published it if it was Don Jr., 100%. Maybe I would have even gone harder, because at least Joe Biden is obvious and open about the fact that he's a creature of the establishment and a globalist, whereas Trump would have been doing the opposite, like saying the opposite while he would have been doing that. Anyway, I would have published it no matter what. But the way I look at it is, like, I wasn't doing this for the Trump campaign. You know, I wasn't doing this to be political. I was publishing the story that I had, and it was about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. And then when they censored it, you know, that was a huge like moment in American consciousness, right? Because what we learned and what we're continuing to learn even till this day, 2 years later, is that we had an illusion of a social media platform and of a press that was private. And what it really was, which was revealed in all of this, was that no, this is a cutout for the federal government to decide what we can talk about and what we can read about. And now we've learned that Twitter was co-opted by the FBI, and that the FBI was the one that planted that seed for them to censor it months in advance when they knew that the laptop was going to come out, right? That's what we learned in the Twitter files. And then the same, they were the ones that came up with the narrative also for people like Brian Stelter and Jeff Zucker at CNN to call this a right-wing conspiracy and Russian disinformation. That was all originated in the FBI. So as a journalist, I look at this, and yes, obviously it's infuriating to have your work undermined like that and censored like that when you wrote it for the American public to make an informed decision about voting, right? But at the same time, it's like, no, this exposed the real scandal, which is even bigger than the Biden family, much bigger than the Biden family. The real scandal is that the FBI is performing an operation internally, an intelligence operation internally. That is a scandal of historic proportions. It's bigger than the Bidens.
I keep telling people this. The FBI is the story here. The federal law enforcement arm is now officially a protection racket on behalf of Democrats and against Republicans. You actually don't have a country anymore. The country's already finished, which actually brings me to one final thing on the Biden end of this. This Biden University of Delaware story that you have, China donations to University of Delaware as soon as Joe Biden starts his institute there. You know what this reminds me of, Emma Jo? This reminds me of the Clintons when Hillary was Secretary of State and all of a sudden the Clinton Foundation was getting these gigantic donations from foreign entities, and it was just so obviously dirty and corrupt to everybody with a set of eyes. This reminds me of that.
Oh, yeah, and it reminds them of that. They talk about that in the emails when they're discussing it, that they want to, like, take the model of the Clinton Foundation. Clinton's on the initiative. Like, that's not lost on the Bidens either, let me tell you. But, this is... What is the University of Delaware? You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, this becomes of intense interest to the Chinese government and to individuals linked with the Chinese government, where they're all of a sudden funneling millions of dollars. I mean, you know... I don't know that there's a lot of members of the Chinese government that give away money for free. So that in and of itself ought to raise questions. But really, it's like there's smoke there because they were obviously had no interest in the University of Delaware, probably the most random university in America. I don't know of any notable alumni other than maybe Joe Biden who went there. It's like, what? And so they all of a sudden start sending millions of dollars to this university. And reported last night, the FBI has taken documents from the University of Delaware.
What a shock. Emma Jo Morris, go read her stuff if you want to be informed. Thank you, Emma Jo. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. The Bidens. This whole China-Biden connection thing, we've talked about it a lot, but seems to be getting more and more real as we travel down that rabbit hole as we just did a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the Chinese end of that here in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's talk about the fact that I don't want your dog to die. And I don't want my dog to die. This is our dog. And I've grown up with dogs, buried plenty of them. Me and my old man with a shovel in the backyard, me crying while I'm digging a hole for my dog. It sucks, right? I give my dog Fred. I give him Rough Greens every single morning. It's not dog food. It's a supplement we pour on his breakfast because dog food is dead food, as they say at Rough Greens. The dog food you have, there's nothing in it. It's all dead. It has to be killed in order to last. They spray it with like lard or something like that when it's all done, just so your dog will even eat the stuff. Rough Greens provides your puppy with real nutrition, digestive enzymes, probiotics, vitamins, minerals. You want your dog to stick around a while? Go ask your vet about Rough Greens. This stuff is for real, man. All natural. Roughgreens.com/Jesse gets you a free jumpstart trial bag. All you pay for is the shipping. Try a bag. roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Incidences. They're reporting to me daily and will continue their urgent efforts to do so, and I will communicate that to the Congress. We don't yet know exactly what these three objects were, but nothing right now suggests they were related to China's spy balloon program or that they were surveillance vehicles from any other country. The intelligence community's current assessment is that these three objects were most likely balloons tied to private companies, recreation or research institutions studying weather or conducting other scientific research.
Wait, what? What? Hold on, what? We're just shooting down anything? You know what? We're gonna ask Lisa about it. Joining me now, the editor-in-chief at the Foreign Desk. I can't wait to hear Lisa unpack this. Lisa Daftari. Lisa, okay, so help me understand what I just heard there. The president is either lying and covering up for a foreign country, or I don't know which one is worse, or we are just officially just blasting away at anything that flies now in America. What did I just hear?
Yeah, it just doesn't add up, right? He's basically repeating the propaganda of the Chinese government that said these are satellite images for weather or whatever it is, or just dismissing it as private company balloons. I mean, private company balloons, if they're here from a foreign country, just like those individuals who are in our universities and in our labs and in our places of government, shouldn't be there. Look, best case scenario, the Chinese were kind of figuring out how much they can get away with. As Congressman Daryl Issa said when I was in Washington last week, they were measuring before they cut. And I like that phrasing. And worst case scenario, we already heard that these balloons did have espionage capabilities, so that they were already doing what they were planning on doing in the future, which is spying on us in a very detailed way over our nuclear locations and to find out more than they already know. Look, Jesse, the problem is that they already have so much of an in into our country, into very delicate, very sensitive places where they should not have information. And this is just one more, you know, episode of proving to us how deeply they have infiltrated.
Lisa, help me understand what information they can gather by flying something overhead that I can't gather hopping on a Southwest Airlines flight this afternoon with my cell phone camera out there. It's hard for a normal person or an idiot like me to understand what China gains by flying something 60,000 feet in the air taking pictures. I know it's something, I just don't know what it is. What is it?
Right. Yeah, it goes both ways, right? So again, they're seeing how deep they could get into our airspace without us noticing, without us. How long will it take us to shoot it down? How annoyed will we really be? And how will President Biden react? And we saw how he reacted at the podium. But worst case scenario, again, this is espionage technology, which is what experts are telling us. That means that they are able to take pictures, they're able to take video, they know exactly where our nuclear facilities are located, they know where our vulnerabilities are, they know how well these areas are kept in terms of security. They're able to take pictures. They're able to do copycat technology copy. We know that they do that. They have done that in the past with other things as well. You know, again, why should we allow the Chinese to have this kind of access? And why did we wait so long? What kind of message is that sending? And then to have Biden stand at the podium and basically cover up for them and to lie to the American people, because what the experts are telling us does not line up with what he just told us. So there's a bit of a problem here.
There's a huge problem here. Lisa, can you, how screwed are we? And I know that's a terrible question, but this is what I mean. If we have a government, maybe even a president, president's son, God only knows how many people in the administrative state, if we have a government that covers up for China because of ties for China, at the same time China is getting aggressive with us, well, that makes normal people like you and I a bit nervous, because what are we supposed to do? I can't go to war.
No, we can't go to war. And then our government is bowing down more and more and more allowing these bad actors to get away with more. Look, on the face of it, our foreign policy is so weak. So our enemies are walking all over us. So we're already, to use your own words, screwed in that sense, right? Then when you see them
actually behind the scenes cutting deals with them. We have questions about Ukraine. We have questions about China, of course. We have questions about Iran's regime. Why aren't we being more aggressive with them? Why are we pushing them into the hands of the Chinese? Why are we allowing the Iranians to sell drones to the Russians? Why are we allowing these new bedfellows to get closer and closer than ever before? So our weak foreign policy has serious consequences that we are already seeing the ramifications of. But then there's, again, like you said, another layer of what's going on behind the scenes. What has been promised to whom? And how is our foreign policy now paralleling that in order to fulfill those promises?
And what threats have been made? Hunter Biden himself is on record saying he's had other laptops stolen, he thinks, by nation states. By who? What have they seen on there? How hard is it to call Joe Biden? Hey, I'd hate for these pictures to get out. All right, you know what? That actually brings me to the whole Taiwan situation, Lisa. China's been doing these flybys. They have ships in the water. China wants Taiwan. They've already claimed they have Taiwan. This is not, none of this is breaking news to anybody. Do we think they're going to move? Joe Biden and our administration has been all over the place on what we would do. We're going to help. We're not going to help. We'll help a lot. It's World War III. I can't see China waiting till Joe Biden's potentially gone. They're going to move, right?
Oh, yeah. If you were China or anyone, any other of our adversaries, you'd be moving right now, too. They probably have a clock set on how much time they have left with him in office. Joe Biden met with Xi Jinping a couple months back, right? And he had about a 3-hour meeting, and he walked out of that meeting and he said, I can tell you one thing, China's not going to invade Taiwan. Well, when you piece together all of these other very inconvenient truths about how China is moving and progressing in that region, how they're flexing their muscles, how they're provoking Taiwan, it looks like they are moving in that direction. I think any idiot could tell you that, right? And then you look at the resources we have to help Taiwan. On the one hand, we're helping them. We're trying to say that we're going to train them. We're going to help them. We're going to stand behind them. Verbally, that's what the White House, that's the positioning they have taken. But on the other hand, Biden keeps telling us, relax, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to invade. Well, the bad news, Jesse, is that we don't even know if we have the resources to help Taiwan in the full capacity that we would want to if this should happen anytime soon because of all the help that we've been giving Ukraine, all the billions of dollars, all the tanks, all the military equipment that we overpromised Ukraine. Now it looks like it will take us some time to replenish in order to help Taiwan in the way that would be meaningful for them to put up a fight against China.
Well, the good news is I'm sure the defense contractors will be happy to oblige for another couple trillion dollars. Lisa, we Americans, we tend to be, well, we have biases. There's no question about it. I most definitely do. And when we think about Middle Eastern countries, we tend to think about them as being these backwards places that aren't as advanced as we are. And surely they don't have foreign intelligence services that would be involved in our country or our hemisphere. But Iran is involved in our hemisphere, aren't they?
Absolutely. And for years, we have been trying to get the Obama administration first, their attention on this. And of course, now the Biden administration's attention on the fact that Iran has been very much interested in fortifying its assets and its presence in Latin America. They absolutely want to be at the footbed of America. They want to be able to say that they're here, that they're closer than we think. It's a free-for-all, right? You're looking at places like Venezuela, Bolivia, Paraguay, Uruguay, of course, Brazil, now more than ever with the new president that's there is very close with Iran's regime. But Venezuela, let's go back to Venezuela. They have set up cultural centers there. They're very close with the government there. There are direct flights between Caracas and Tehran on a daily basis. And now, rumor has it, and I have sources on the ground in Venezuela to confirm this, say that there's a lot of buzzing around with the last 5 months. We've seen protests in Iran. A lot of the head honchos over there are fearful. They're sending their family members. They're sending money. They're sending a lot of their assets to Venezuela in case there should be a rainy day and they need to go somewhere. Also, we saw Iran's regime threatening to get ships out to Brazil, to Panama, to have, again, presence there to provoke us because they can, because they have gotten away with every threat they have made against the United States and against the West. They were in a meaningless nuclear deal that they did not adhere to, which Donald Trump ripped up in May of 2018. And the Biden administration, well, Biden campaigned on getting back into that deal for no good reason. And now he has spent all of his presidency trying to make nice with a regime that has not responded to that kindness, that has not reciprocated, and has not made a deal. Fast forward to the last 5 months, we've seen protests by the people of Iran telling us, do not make a deal with this government. put sanctions on our government. They're actually asking for sanctions because they want that pressure on their government so that they can get help in overthrowing this regime. But of course, this administration has said we will not support regime change in Iran and have stopped short of supporting the Iranian people in a way that's meaningful for them.
Wow, what a shock. Lisa, that was awesome. Come back soon.
News for me. Thank you.
Hey, it was news. Come back soon.
Thanks.
All right. That was a lot. Crazy stuff going on in the world. May you live in interesting times, right? May you protect your money, too? You know what all these tensions mean for that 401k of yours, right? That IRA. Oh, I'm in the same boat. Don't get me wrong. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm in the exact same boat, staring at your phone, opening it up, thinking, oh, wow, that hurt. Get some gold in your IRA and 401k. What it does, it raises the floor and just how far you can drop when all this stuff finally blows up and kicks off. Oxford Gold makes that cake. They're so laid back, so easy to work with. It's who I use. I've sent my own dad there. They have a portfolio protection plan. Make that phone call like right now, 833-995-GOLD. Tell them I told you to call. They will take extra special care of you, I promise. 833-995-GOLD, all right? We'll be back. That's a resident of East Palestine who apparently doesn't want to go through the testing the railroad has volunteered to pay for. Can hardly blame her there. Let's ask Ross about this. Joining me now, my friend Ross Kennedy, founder of Fortis Analysis, knows more than I could ever know in a million years about supply chains and this kind of stuff. Okay, Ross, I don't like to dabble in online conspiracies. I really don't. I don't know. What I see is there's a new train going off the rails every 15 minutes now, apparently, in the country. We're blasting everything we can out of the sky. Food processing plants are burning up. I'm sure at least some of this is just coincidence. What do you believe?
Well, I think it's a day ending in Y in 2023 at this point.
Yeah.
You know, a big part of the issue that we're seeing is, I think in a lot of ways, this is really kind of the fat tail, if you will, of the pandemic. A lot of decisions that were made, mostly poor decision-making. By political leaders worldwide, malfeasance here and there, of course. And the United States is really engaged in a form of low-intensity economic warfare with China, as well as with Russia and Iran and others. So the range of potential outcomes or causes for these things are very broad. Derailments is one of those things that train derailments happen way more frequently, I think, than people realize. But a mushroom cloud of hazardous, chemical gas burning into the atmosphere is a pretty splashy visual. And so I think a lot of people have fixated on that. Regrettably, it's what we're seeing here is lack of maintenance, overstretched labor. It's one of the big reasons that the railroad labor negotiations continue to drag on and without a real genuine resolution to the problem. And on top of all of that, for 15 years, Surface Transportation Board and others have really tried to enforce stronger system standards on the railroads, in particular new braking systems that in this case probably would have avoided that this train in East Palestine was not equipped with. And so when we take all these things into account, you're just stacking up all the ways in which a bad thing could happen. And sure enough, a tragic thing really did happen here. It's unfortunate, but it is where we are.
Can you nerd out on the details for a minute about what are these railroads lacking? You brought up brakes and you brought up overstretched labor. What's going on? Are we working these guys 24 hours a day and they're just forgetting to change the brake pads on the things? I don't know how trains work. What's going on?
Fundamentally, it's two things are happening here. You have an aging workforce on the rail side. The death of blue collar expertise in this country is very, very real. And really, other than Micro and a few other core, places, not really appreciated and spoken about very much. It's just not a field people go into where they feel like they can make a good living. So we have an aging workforce. People are retiring out. That's one issue. The second issue is that modern safety mechanisms on trains are incredibly expensive if you want to do it right. So that would be, you know, electronic pneumatic brakes rather than airline brakes that have very long lag between the time when the engineer pulls the brake and when a 100-car unit train can stop. The new systems dramatically shorten that and make it safer. You've also got very digital railway control systems now, what they call positive train control. And those are things that keep the trains from colliding with one another, staying on the track they're supposed to be on, automatically alerting the train and applying brakes without human intervention. And not only are those systems good, but we have underinvested in them significantly. The railroads are doing their best. Precision railroading is a business scheme. Continues to be an issue where they're building longer, heavier, fewer trains to try to optimize cost. And then you talk about the hacking element, which can't be discounted when you're talking about digital things connected to the internet. It sure would be a very splashy, high-profile target if somebody wanted to make a point to derail an entire train of hazardous chemicals that they chose to.
Final question about China. You mentioned we're in a low-intensity conflict with China. And this whole situation is so fascinating to me. I know it is to you, too, that we are opponents. We are enemies. That they've said so publicly. But we need each other. We are so economically intertwined, yet we have these. How does this work when you have somebody who, if they pull out, we're both dead. If we pull out, we're both dead, yet we're fighting. How does this go, Ross?
Well, you have to kind of look at it at two ends of the spectrum. On the one end of the spectrum, we have enormous economic cooperation with, ties to China. You know, they manufacture 20% of everything in the world. We can't get away from that without a concerted effort over 5, 10, 15, 20 years of enormous capital investment. The second issue is that not everybody in the world will follow America's lead. Some countries still see it as a net good to be tied to China economically. And so we have to balance that with what is in our own rational best interest wherever we can decouple and exert influence on our own economic future, our national security, we should do that. If we look at the big picture as well, though, we have to adopt strategies that maybe are not, maybe the same way we approached Iraq and Afghanistan, where we can go and impose our will. In a lot of ways, we are dealing with a peer adversary here, militarily as well as economically. And so our strategies have to adopt. We need to, in my view, utilize, you know, Albert Colby wrote a book called The Strategy of Denial, where we work with our allies, we utilize our own economic and military power to support and build up allies in the region and give them an opportunity to choose away from China. And collectively, that weight will be enough to keep them from rising too far or getting too aggressive in pursuit of their own interest.
Ross, I appreciate it, man. Come back soon.
All right, thanks, Jesse.
It was a great show tonight, if I say so myself. And we still have Light in the Mood to come. Light in the Mood's coming up next. Before we get to Light in the Mood, let's talk. We just talked a little bit about the crumbling of everything. It's just, we're a late-stage republic. It's what we are. Systems around us are crumbling. You didn't do it. It's not your fault. But we got to prepare, right? Part of my preparation for that is making sure I avoid the doctor's office because the medical community is crumbling just like the railroads. I know you see it. If you know anyone in the medical community, they will tell you it, at least privately they will. They all tell me your medical systems that you've been able to rely on your entire life are crumbling around you. Stay out of the doctor's office. Keep yourself healthy. Drink more water. Work out more. Get yourself a Chalk subscription of natural herbal supplements so you can make sure you're getting all the nutrition your body needs and you're not sitting in the doctor's office while some woke idiot a year from now is trying to figure out your charts, but you're kind of too white for him to bother with. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse, the entire site, natural herbal supplements, 35% off subscriptions. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse. This is part of how you prepare, all right? We'll be back. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. I have angered the feminists. It's not the first time I've done that. Probably won't be the last. But I feel like this whole thing has gotten way out of hand. So here's what I'm going to do. Before we go into how mad they are and what they're saying to me, here's what we're going to do. We're going to extend a hand to the feminists out there. All the feminists watching, all the feminists who are mad at me and Jesse, you're mean and you're really mean to us and whatnot. Here's my hand extension to all of you feminists. I know what you love. I know you love to eat. My Patriot Supply has emergency three-month food kits, $200 off right now. I suggest you get two of them. One, I want you to get it and stash it. So that way, when all the systems collapse, you'll be able to eat and you'll be able to survive and you won't have to eat your cats. But I want you to get another one so you can just eat it right away. It's 2,000 calories a day. That'll go well with the other 10,000 calories a day you currently eat. MyPatriotSupply.com has emergency three-month food kits, $200 off, right? MyPatriotSupply.com. There you go. I'm sorry. I mean, look, there's articles in the Huffington Post today about what a meanie I am, The Independent, The Daily Beast. They're all talking about what a big sexist jerk Jesse is. Chelsea Handler, to her credit, actually went online and responded.
Feminists like Chelsea Handler, they've been lied to by their society forever. Yeah. That you could be a girl boss and you can do anything a man can do, which everyone who's ever seen a woman back up a vehicle knows that's not true. Your womb resembles a dried up tumbleweed blowing down an old western town. And your Valentine's Day date for the 10th year in a row is a 10-year-old copy of Magic Mike and a half full bottle of Xanax.
Hey everyone, I woke up this morning, well, more like this afternoon, and noticed that there was an emergency meeting of the Receding Hairline Society to discuss a comedy video I filmed about not wanting kids. Wow. Why would I even need my own children when I get to hear these crybabies all the time? I mean, I can't believe that bearded version of Tucker Carlson thinks I would take a half a bottle of Xanax. I'd take way more than that, you silly goose.
I gotta be honest. That's pretty funny. I mean, for a woman. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.